A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's asking about compulsory schooling ages around the world, how homeschooling rates vary by country, and whether any of it actually correlates with measurable differences in happiness or educational attainment. It's one of those questions where the answer starts simple and then immediately gets complicated. So the question is, are we optimizing for the wrong variable?
This is one of those topics where the surface-level debate is completely disconnected from what the data actually says. Let's start by mapping the actual landscape. Where does the world begin formal education, and who's opting out?
The global landscape of compulsory schooling start ages is one of those things that looks orderly from a distance and then dissolves into chaos the closer you get. Finland starts at 7, Sweden and Germany at 6.
And the homeschooling side is even messier because the data we have is almost comically confounded by selection effects. So let's start by mapping the global landscape of school start ages and homeschooling rates, because the variation alone tells you this isn't being driven by developmental science.
If this were a scientific decision, you'd expect convergence. Everyone would land on roughly the same age. Instead, you've got a spread from 4 to 7, which in childhood development terms is an enormous gap.
Finnish children don't start academic instruction until 7, but they've been in universal, high-quality pre-primary programs since age 1, heavily subsidized, play-based, staffed by people with bachelor's degrees in early childhood education. So the start age of 7 is really just the moment the curriculum shifts from play to academics. The child has been in a structured educational environment for 6 years already. The Netherlands and Malta also start at 5. Meanwhile, the UK's early start, age 4 or 5, traces back to the 1870 Education Act and the 1944 Butler Act, which embedded a cultural belief that early intervention closes attainment gaps.
The US is a patchwork, because of course it is.
Of course it is. Every state sets its own compulsory age ranging from 5 to 8, though 8 is rare. It's mostly 5 to 7. Connecticut and Massachusetts are age 5. California and Texas are age 6. Washington State is 8. But that's an outlier, and most parents send kids long before that.
What's driving these differences? Because they're not random.
It means we've built entire national education systems around assumptions about childhood that were essentially political hunches dressed up in legislation. The Early Start model traces back to Prussia in the 18th century. Compulsory schooling was designed for nation building and industrialization. You needed a literate workforce, and you needed it standardized. That model spread through Europe and to the United States. The UK's early start at 5 is a direct descendant of that thinking. Get them in early, get them standardized, get them productive.
They were philosophical bets.
Philosophical bets with multi-generational consequences. And that's actually a useful frame for the whole conversation. Every country placed a bet about what childhood is for, and now we're living with the results. The question Daniel's asking is basically, who won the bet? The idea was the whole child. Social, emotional, physical development alongside cognitive. To understand why these numbers look the way they do, we need to look at the legal and cultural forces that shape them. And nowhere is that more vivid than the homeschooling landscape.
The homeschooling numbers are genuinely surprising if you haven't looked at them recently. The U.S. rate hit about 3.4% in 2022, up from 2.5% in 2009. That's the largest single increase in recorded history.
That's the single biggest misconception in this entire debate. The Finnish success is due to a holistic system, high-quality teachers, low student-to-teacher ratios, play-based learning, comprehensive social supports, not just the late start age. Then you get to Germany, where homeschooling is effectively banned. The compulsory school attendance law dates to 1909, and it's enforced with fines up to 1,000 euros and, in extreme cases, custody proceedings.
It's like saying Formula One cars have wide tires, so I'll put wide tires on my sedan and win races. The tires aren't doing the work in isolation.
Now let's talk about homeschooling rates, because the variation there is just as striking. The United States is the clear outlier among developed nations. The German ban has a specific historical logic that's worth understanding. It's a direct response to the Nazi era. The post-war government wanted state oversight of education to prevent ideological indoctrination. The thinking was, if children are educated in private, the state can ensure they're being taught democratic values. Whether that logic still holds in 2026 is debatable, but that's the origin.
You can see the same logic operating in different ways across Europe. Sweden takes a similarly restrictive approach. Homeschooling requires state approval and is only granted in exceptional circumstances.
It did, and the composition of homeschooling families changed too, which is a philosophical claim about the purpose of education that's worth naming explicitly. The German and Swedish models treat school as a civic institution first and an academic one second. The American model, and to varying degrees the UK, Australian, and Canadian models, treats education more as a service that parents can choose to provide themselves if they prefer. These aren't just different policies.
Which makes sense. Once you've reorganized your entire household around a different model, the inertia to return to the default is low, especially if the default wasn't working great for your particular kid.
Now compare that to other countries. The UK was estimated at maybe 0.5-1% pre-2020, rising to about 2-3% by 2023, according to the Association of Directors of Children's Services. Australia went from about 0.5% in 2015 to roughly 2.5% in 2023. Canada varies by province but sits around 1-2%.
But the trend over the past three decades has been toward deregulation, and the post-pandemic surge accelerated that.
Can we talk about those 11 no-notification states for a second? Because that's an extraordinary policy position when you think about it. In those states, a child can disappear from the educational grid entirely, and the state has no mechanism to verify that any education is happening at all. There was a high-profile case in 2019 where the Wunderlich family fled Germany for the United States specifically to avoid fines and potential custody loss for homeschooling their children.
There have been documented cases in states like Ohio and Texas where children were withdrawn from school to be homeschooled and were later found in abusive or neglectful situations with no educational component whatsoever.
That's exactly what they were. And Germany is not alone. Sweden, while more lenient, makes homeschooling extremely difficult, requiring special permission that's rarely granted. It's the extreme end of the spectrum we've been mapping. On one side, Germany with its 500 homeschooled children and potential custody proceedings for non-compliance.
You've got this spectrum. From Germany's near-total prohibition to America's rapidly growing homeschooling sector, and the philosophical assumptions behind each couldn't be more different. We've got this global picture. Compulsory start ages ranging from 3-8. Homeschooling rates ranging from 0 to nearly 4%, and legal frameworks ranging from outright bans to complete permissiveness. The question is whether any of this variation corresponds to differences in how happy or educated people end up.
We've seen the variation. Now the question everyone actually cares about, does any of it matter for happiness and learning? The idea is that if you allow parents to opt out, you risk creating parallel societies that don't share a common civic framework.
Finnish students reported an average of 7.2 out of 10. The UK was 6.5. The US was 6.4.
On the surface, that looks like a point for the late start model. Finland starts at 7, kids are happier. Case closed, right?
Except Sweden starts at 6 and reports 7.1 out of 10, nearly identical to Finland. Germany starts at 6 and comes in around 6.7.
Let's start with educational attainment. What the PISA data actually shows is that the stronger predictors of life satisfaction are income inequality, social trust, and something called school belonging. Basically, whether kids feel connected to their peers and teachers. Countries with lower inequality and higher social trust produce happier students regardless of when school starts. The start age is a bystander variable.
A bystander variable. I like that. It's present at the scene but didn't pull the trigger.
And the same pattern shows up in adult life satisfaction data. The World Happiness Report consistently ranks the Nordic countries at the top: Finland, Denmark, Iceland, Sweden, Norway. These countries all have different school start ages, different approaches to early childhood education, and different rules around homeschooling. What they share is strong social safety nets, low inequality, and high levels of social trust.
If you're a policymaker trying to raise childhood happiness, the evidence points toward reducing inequality and building social cohesion, not tweaking the school start age by a year.
It's one of the most robust findings in education research. The idea is simple. In any given grade cohort, the oldest kids, those born just after the cutoff date, tend to outperform the youngest kids, those born just before the cutoff. Which brings us to educational attainment, where the story is messier but more interesting. PISA 22-2 scores. Finland averaged 5016 across reading, math, and science. The UK was 503. The US was 4089.
4 to 12 percentile points just from when your birthday falls relative to an arbitrary cutoff.
It persists into adulthood. The same researchers found that relative age affects the probability of attending university, of becoming a professional athlete, even of holding a leadership position. It's not that absolute age matters for development. It's that relative age within a cohort creates self-fulfilling prophecies. The critical piece of evidence here is the 2023 meta-analysis by Pagani and colleagues, published in Educational Research Review. They covered 47 studies across 22 countries looking at the effect of delayed school entry.
The mechanism isn't developmental readiness, it's social sorting within cohorts.
But, and this is the crucial part, the effect fades to near zero by age 15. Which raises an uncomfortable question. If the birthday effect is this powerful, maybe we should be less worried about the absolute start age and more worried about how we group children once they're in the system.
Or whether we should group them by age at all.
Which suggests that early start may function as a compensatory mechanism. It gets disadvantaged. Children into structured learning environments earlier, which partially offsets the enrichment gap at home.
That's the argument France made for lowering the compulsory age to 3, and it's not obviously wrong. But it also raises the question of what kind of environment they're entering.
Right, and it's become increasingly common in affluent U.S. districts. Parents hold their 5-year-old boys back so they'll be the oldest in their kindergarten class rather than the youngest. There's a well-known study by Bassick and Reardon from 2013 that looked at the redshirting phenomenon in the U.S., parents voluntarily delaying kindergarten for children with summer birthdays.
Which makes it a class privilege masquerading as a developmental choice.
It absolutely is. And the research on whether redshirting actually helps is mixed. Some studies show short-term academic benefits that fade by middle school. Others show that being significantly older than peers can create social challenges in adolescence. The kid who's 6 in a kindergarten class of 4-year-olds might have an advantage at 5, but being 15 in a class of 13-year-olds is a different experience entirely.
What about happiness and well-being? Because the prompt specifically asked about happiness, not just test scores.
You've got a room full of 5 and 6-year-olds where the age spread is actually enormous in developmental terms, and it correlates with socioeconomic status. That's not a recipe for equitable outcomes. There was a 2020 study by Baker and colleagues in the Journal of Happiness Studies that found later school start, ages 6 to 7 versus 4 to 5, was associated with higher self-reported well-being at age 10. But here's the catch. The effect faded by age 15.
By mid-adolescence, the happiness advantage disappears.
Brian Ray's 2023 study for the National Home Education Research Institute found that homeschooled students in the U.S. score at the 75th percentile on standardized tests, compared to the 50th percentile for public school students. Now, the 2019 UNICEF report on child well-being ranked the Netherlands, Denmark, and Finland, all late start countries, in the top 5, while the UK and US, early start countries, ranked 16th and 23rd respectively. But as you know, correlation is not causation, and those rankings are influenced by dozens of factors beyond school start age.
The same countries that start school later also tend to have stronger social safety nets, lower child poverty rates, better parental leave policies. You can't isolate the school start age from that whole package.
Families whose kids are struggling may simply not participate in the studies. The most widely cited study is the 2023 NHERI study by Brian Ray, which found that homeschooled students scored 15 to 30 percentile points higher on standardized tests than public school peers.
You receive an invitation to participate in a study that involves having your child take a standardized test. Are you eager to sign up? Now imagine you're a parent whose child is reading 3 grade levels ahead.
It is enormous, and it's the number homeschooling advocates love to cite. But, and this is a crucial but, these studies are heavily criticized for selection bias. The 2022 longitudinal study by Chang and Donnelly from Harvard is probably the most rigorous work on this. They tracked homeschooled and conventionally schooled students into adulthood and found similar levels of life satisfaction and civic engagement.
The question isn't, do homeschooled kids outperform public school kids? It's, do homeschooled kids outperform what those same kids would have achieved in a traditional school?
That's the counterfactual we can't observe. But there is some research that tries to control for these factors. A 2022 peer-reviewed study by Kunzman and Gaither in the Peabody Journal of Education found that outcomes vary wildly by homeschooling approach. Structured curricula produce better academic results than unschooling. On the social development question, the stereotype of the isolated homeschooler, the evidence pretty consistently contradicts it.
Which makes intuitive sense. No plan is not a pedagogy.
The socialization concern turns out to be mostly a cultural anxiety rather than an empirically supported risk. A 2021 longitudinal study by Martin Chang and colleagues in the Canadian Journal of Behavioral Science found that homeschooled children had higher academic achievement but lower scores on measures of openness to experience compared to public school peers.
But as a general claim about homeschooling as a practice, the data doesn't support the isolation narrative.
This connects back to something we keep seeing in the research. The quality of the environment matters far more than the label on the building. A well-resourced homeschool with engaged parents and rich social opportunities produces good outcomes. A neglectful homeschool produces bad outcomes. A well-funded school with good teachers produces good outcomes. An underfunded school with burned-out teachers produces bad outcomes. The setting is downstream of the quality. Homeschooling, even with co-ops and extracurriculars, tends to involve more curated social environments.
People want the setting to be the variable that explains everything. If we just get kids into school earlier, or keep them home longer, or ban homeschooling, or require it, and the evidence keeps saying it's the content, not the container.
Let's talk about the Finnish paradox, because I think it's the clearest illustration of this point. Finnish children start academic instruction at 7, have shorter school days, less homework, and no standardized testing until age 16. And they outperform almost everyone.
The psychological immune system needs exposure to pathogens.
The start age is just one piece of a much larger system. We have small studies with self-selected samples. Anyone who tells you the data is definitive on either side is selling something.
If you provide high-quality early childhood environments, well-trained and well-paid teachers, and a social safety net that means kids aren't showing up hungry or stressed, you can afford to start academic instruction later. The late start isn't the cause of the good outcomes. It's made possible by the same conditions that produce them.
This is where the cross-country comparisons get useful. When you look at countries that start early and do well, like Singapore, they're also investing heavily in teacher quality and have strong social support systems. When you look at countries that start early and do poorly, you typically find underinvestment in everything else. The start age is a decoy.
There's a 2022 working paper from the OECD that tried to isolate the effect of school start age from all the confounders.
It teaches that when parents lose trust in the system, they'll leave it if they can. Finland's low homeschooling rate, less than 0.1%, isn't because Finns are legally prevented from homeschooling. It's because they trust their schools. The U.S. homeschooling surge is in part a vote of no confidence in institutional education.
Though it's worth noting that the post-2020 surge wasn't just about trust. It was also about practicality. Remote work made it feasible, COVID made it necessary, and for some families it just stuck.
Point two, what does have lasting effects are teacher quality, curriculum quality, equitable funding, and the availability of high-quality early childhood environments, whether those environments are at home, in preschool, or in school. It assumes that all children of a given age are ready for the same thing at the same time, which is developmentally absurd. We know that children mature at different rates. If you're a parent trying to decide whether to homeschool or when to start your child in formal education, the evidence points away from generalized rules and towards specific questions. What's the quality of the available school?
The assembly line doesn't care if this particular unit needs an extra 6 months.
And what's interesting about the post-pandemic landscape is that it's forcing a rethinking of that model. The rise of microschools, learning pods, hybrid models, AI tutoring, the binary of homeschool versus conventional school may be obsolete within a decade.
I've been saying that.
And I think you're right. The future probably looks more like a spectrum. Kids moving between home-based learning, small group instruction, online coursework, and traditional classroom time depending on what they need at a given stage.
Which brings us to what parents and policymakers should actually do with this information, because that's what people want to know.
Let's get concrete. For parents considering homeschooling, the data suggests a few things. First, structured curricula and active parental involvement are key predictors of success. Unschooling without a plan is riskier. It can work for some kids, but on average, the academic outcomes are weaker. Second, pay attention to socialization. Not the caricature version. Your kid doesn't need to be in a classroom of 30 to learn social skills, but they do need regular exposure to diverse peers and perspectives. Co-ops, sports teams, community organizations. Those aren't optional extras, they're essential.
Check your local laws. The legal landscape varies enormously. In some states, homeschooling requires basically no reporting. In others, you need to submit curricula, conduct standardized testing, and meet with evaluators. Know what you're getting into.
For policymakers, the key insight is that raising the school start age to 6 or 7 is unlikely to harm academic outcomes and may improve well-being, but only if accompanied by high-quality preschool and parental leave policies. You can't just move the age and call it a day. The Finnish model isn't just about late start, it's about comprehensive support that begins long before age 7.
If you're a parent who's not homeschooling but is questioning the default, the actionable takeaway is, consider your child's temperament and your local school quality rather than following the default age. Some kids thrive in early formal settings. Others would benefit from an extra year of play-based development. The research on redshirting is mixed, but if your kid is on the young side for their cohort and showing signs of not being ready, delaying a year is a reasonable option, if you can afford it.
The class privilege problem is real there, and it's uncomfortable. The families who can afford to redshirt are the ones who least need the advantage. Meanwhile, families who can't afford an extra year of childcare send their 4-year-olds into kindergarten whether they're ready or not.
Which is an argument for universal, high-quality preschool that makes the redshirting question moot. If every child has access to developmentally appropriate early education, the exact age they transition to formal schooling becomes less consequential.
And that's where the policy conversation should be focused, not on what's the magic age, but on how do we ensure every child has a high-quality environment, whether it's at home, in preschool, or in kindergarten.
To directly answer the question that was asked, does the data show meaningful differences in happiness and educational attainment based on the age at which people start school? The short answer is no, not in a causal sense. The age itself doesn't appear to drive outcomes. What drives outcomes is the quality of the learning environment and the socioeconomic context surrounding it. The birthday effect shows that relative age within a cohort matters, but absolute start age doesn't predict much once you control for other factors.
On the homeschooling side, the data shows that it can produce excellent outcomes, but it's not a magic bullet, and the results depend heavily on structure, parental involvement, and resources. The 15 to 30 percentile point advantage you see in some studies is almost certainly inflated by selection effects. That doesn't mean homeschooling is bad. It means we should be honest about what the evidence does and doesn't show.
There's one more thing I want to flag. When people debate school start age and homeschooling, they're often really debating something else. The purpose of childhood. Is childhood preparation for adulthood? Or is it a phase of life with its own intrinsic value? If you believe childhood is primarily preparation, you want to start formal instruction as early as possible to maximize the runway. If you believe childhood has intrinsic value, you want to protect unstructured time, play, and family bonding.
That's not a question data can answer. It's a philosophical question. The data can tell you that starting at 5 versus 7 doesn't change test scores much, but it can't tell you whether an extra 2 years of play-based childhood is inherently valuable.
The data says it probably doesn't hurt outcomes to start later. It doesn't say, therefore you should.
There are still big open questions that will shape the next decade of education. As AI tutoring and microschools proliferate, will the concept of a school start age become obsolete? What happens when personalized learning can begin at any age, tailored to an individual child's readiness rather than a bureaucratic calendar?
That's the disruptive possibility. We've been talking about when should children start school, as if school is a fixed thing. But if AI tutors can provide personalized instruction at any age, and if microschools and learning pods can operate with flexible enrollment, the whole idea of a compulsory start age starts to look like a relic.
We're already seeing the early stages of this. States like Florida and Arizona have passed education savings account programs that let parents use public funds for a wide range of educational options: private schools, homeschool curricula, tutoring, online courses. The line between in-school and not in-school is blurring.
Which could be great for flexibility and personalization, or it could accelerate inequality. Families with more time and social capital will navigate the new landscape better than families with less.
That's the tension. The industrial model of education was inequitable in many ways, but at least it was uniformly inequitable. A highly customized, market-driven system could produce much wider gaps between the best-served and worst-served kids.
The next decade is going to be an experiment, whether we design it as one or not. The post-pandemic shifts, the technology, the policy changes, they're all pushing toward a more fragmented, personalized system. The question is whether we can maintain some common floor of quality and access while allowing for that flexibility.
Whether we can have honest conversations about what the evidence actually says, rather than cherry-picking data to support pre-existing positions. The pro-early start camp and the pro-late start camp both have their cherry-picked studies. The pro-homeschooling camp and the anti-homeschooling camp both have theirs. What the data actually shows is messier and more nuanced than either side wants to admit.
The slogan version is, it depends.
On the quality of the environment, on the temperament of the child, on the resources available to the family, on the broader policy context. There is no single right answer, and anyone selling you one is ignoring the complexity.
Which is not a satisfying conclusion, but it's an honest one.
I think that's where we should leave it. The prompt asked about global variation and what the data shows. We've mapped the variation and shown that the data doesn't support strong causal claims about start age driving outcomes. The actionable insight for parents is to pay attention to your specific child and your specific options rather than following a default. For policymakers, the insight is to focus on quality and support across the whole system rather than fixating on the calendar.
For everyone else, maybe the next time someone tells you with absolute certainty that kids should start school at 5 or at 7, or that homeschooling is either a panacea or a disaster, you can respond with a gentle, "It's more complicated than that."
Which is basically the tagline of this entire podcast. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In 1813, the coronation of a local ruler in what is now Tajikistan required the new leader to be weighed against an equivalent amount of salt, roughly 160 pounds, which was then distributed to the population as a symbol of preserved prosperity. At today's prices, that's about $72 worth of salt.
Right.
$72.
The question we opened with, are we optimizing for the wrong variable? I think the answer is yes. We're fixated on age when we should be fixated on quality, on context, on the individual child. The calendar is a proxy, and it's not a very good one.
As the system fragments and personalizes, the calendar will matter even less. The question won't be, when did you start school? It'll be, what did your learning environment actually look like?
This has been My Weird Prompts, thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with a parent or teacher who's questioning the status quo. They'll find the data useful, even if it doesn't give them a simple answer. Find us at My Weird Prompts.
We'll be back soon with another prompt.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep, The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear holes. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.